And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this. I did it my way.
When our thoughts turn to New Year's Eve, we usually start thinking about a place to celebrate the annual ritual. And when we think about places to celebrate, Las Vegas often comes to mind. You may not have included the city's history in your planning, but Eileen Dugan isn't going to let you get away with that. Her guest this week is Sally Denton, the author of A New History of Las Vegas.
Back in 1955, when Las Vegas was still in its youth, Noah Coward had this to say about the city. When I think of this artificial vividness plunked down in the midst of the most primitive part of the world, I have a curious sense of Las Vegas's history. The covered wagon so little a while ago, and now it's all air conditioning and neon. I find a wonderful excess underfoot. Everything, you see, is arranged here. And yet, I suspect, there's a tragic side. This is the impression that many have when they visit the place they call Sin City, or, as the city fathers would like to call it, America's place to play. It's dazzling, it's hypnotic, but there is a sense that something lurks underneath it all. With us today to explore the history of Las Vegas is journalist Sally Denton. Ms. Denton is the co-author of the recent book, The Money and the Power, The Making of Las Vegas and Its Hold on America. Welcome, Ms. Denton.
Thank you.
What inspired you to investigate the history of Las Vegas?
Well, it actually began as kind of a metaphorical study. We were, I was raised in a small town outside of Las Vegas and am a fourth generation Nevadan. And I always knew as a child growing up that there was something more to this city than, you know, met the eye. There were people, powerful people from all over the world coming there, and I saw it literally rise before my eyes. And from a town of about, you know, 10,000 to a city of a million people now. And but I had been a journalist all over in various parts of the country for about 25 years, and an investigative reporter, and it just seemed like every major story that I got involved with always ended up with some tie to Las Vegas. And so I started looking at Las Vegas more as kind of, you know, what is it about this place that represents the rest of the country, and what is it about this place that really symbolizes the values that the country is now kind of worshiping.
And what are those values that you see?
Well, it's really, I mean, Las Vegas is the unvarnished worship of money. And I really watched it, you know, growing up. I watched it slide from kind of the dark side of the American dream, where people came there and, you know, kind of secretly gambled and, you know, drank and smoked and did all the things that they didn't do back home in Iowa. And then it was like the shadow side, and everybody kind of excitedly walked on the dark side briefly for a weekend or whatever. And then to watch it kind of be transformed from the shadow side into the open side, I mean, that Americans came to embrace the values even, I mean, we used to be kind of ashamed of money being so all important in our lives. And there used to be a sense in which you kind of hid that. And then to see the transformation from that as being kind of, you know, seedy to being something that was just kind of widely and roundly sought after in American culture.
How did Las Vegas begin?
Well, it was, I mean, it was just a little railroad stop originally on the way to California. And it was originally, the first settlement was a Mormon settlement. When Brigham Young, who was the head of the Mormon Church, sent some Mormons over to southern Nevada looking for lead, lead ore to use in as weapons and for ammunition and weapons to in case they were going to go to war with the federal government over the secession of the theocracy. And then it just kind of rose from then, and you know, into just this little desert town. And it really wasn't until gambling became legal in the 1930s that it started taking on a life of its own.
When did organized crime apparently get involved in Las Vegas?
I think they were there from the beginning. I mean, the state of Nevada, the state of Nevada has always been kind of a wide open place, and they had what they called the outfits in various towns. Everybody had, you know, there was wide open gambling and prostitution, and different people controlled it. Well, when they legalized gambling in the state, and Las Vegas became kind of the center of it with the building, the construction of Hoover Dam in the 30s, it was a, I think that there were some major organized crime figures that saw it as an opportunity from the very beginning, especially after the repeal of Prohibition, when organized crime started moving into different kinds of vice once liquor was then legal again.
And what kinds of vice would you be talking about there?
Well, gambling, prostitution, drug trafficking. You know, there was a huge heroin traffic in the 40s that the early money found its way into Las Vegas gambling casinos, and it's just got a long history of control. Now, our book really kind of charts the rise of this criminal underground, you know, from kind of a loosely affiliated group to something more, you know, what we decided to call it the syndicate, to use one of the definitions that Estes Kefauver, the senator from Tennessee, finally came to conclude. But it was a very all-American, multi-ethnic, I mean, this myth of, you know, a bunch of Italian mafiosi coming in and controlling things is really just that, just a myth.
You mentioned all of these different kinds of vices and problems that were going on there. Didn't the U.S. government take notice?
Well, the U.S. government was very slow to take notice, and it was, I mean, Estes Kefauver was really the first person when he did his hearings in the 1950s and actually stopped in Las Vegas almost as an afterthought. Las Vegas was just beginning at that time, and he was looking at, you know, organized crime influences in other parts of the country. And ironically, congressional committee investigation led to the shutting down of a lot of gambling facilities all over the country, in Kentucky and Ohio and Louisiana, places where it had operated kind of, you know, Little Rock, Arkansas, for a long time, and they shut down and all kind of came to Las Vegas. So ironically, it kind of, the Kefauver committee really kind of spurred the growth of Las Vegas. And then the next real look was, you know, Bobby Kennedy when he was the Attorney General. That was probably the first and possibly the last real look at Las Vegas. Every once in a while there's some token, you know, indictment, but it's pretty rare.
How did the type of money behind Las Vegas change over the decades?
I think originally it was the money, the profits from the illegal bootlegging trade during Prohibition that were then reinvested in gambling casinos, and then the profits from the casinos were so enormous immediately that there was what was known as the skim, where you had to, I mean, back in the early days, the state of Nevada didn't even really regulate it, but once they started taxing it in the 1950s, then the casino owners became quite adept at learning how to skim profits off the top so they wouldn't have to report it and be taxed. But the real shift, the original, one of the early shifts, I mean, there have been several shifts in Las Vegas politics and culture, but one of the early shifts was when organized crime started investing in legitimate businesses where they would take the skim off their profits in Las Vegas casinos and drug trafficking all over the country, and then invested in legitimate banks and real estate and hospitals and insurance companies. And before you knew it, they were so intermingled, the funds were so commingled, that it became almost impossible for enforcement officials to, you know, follow the paper trail.
How has the casino business treated women and minorities in general?
Oh, it's probably the worst, one of the worst businesses. I mean, it's a real, it's a company town, writ large, and women rarely, there may be, you know, one woman who's a casino owner at this point, but women rarely, I mean, first of all, they're treated like, as objects in the casinos themselves, as the, you know, cocktail waitresses and the dancers and the, you know, the employees. But as far as a corporate, in the corporate structure, they're almost unheard of, except, you know, possibly in some public relations capacities. But it's not a, and the same with minorities. It's, I mean, Las Vegas was considered the Mississippi of the West. In the early days before the Civil Rights Movement, the black entertainers like Nat King Cole and Sammy Davis Jr. and Ella Fitzgerald, all of the great black entertainers that would come and play at the Sands would have to go and spend the night at a on the West Side, which was a very rundown ghetto, still is. And you know, it was not until later that they were even allowed to spend the night in a room at the hotel where they played.
It's very interesting, though, that there are great connections between Mormons and the growth of the casinos. How is that?
Well, that's all. As I mentioned, there was it was originally a Mormon settlement, even though there were only, you know, a couple of handfuls of people there. The relationship between Utah and Nevada is a long-standing and complicated one. At one point, it was all one territory. And the Mormons were the primary inhabitants. After Nevada became a state in 1864, then there really developed a separate culture. But the Mormon influence has always been enormous there and remains so today. And they have gone through, I mean, the money that came from Las Vegas in tithing and investments in the casino business, the money that went from there to the Salt Lake coffers of the Mormon Church is just absolutely astronomical.
How did Las Vegas turn atomic bomb tests into tourist attractions?
I mean, they're geniuses at marketing, obviously, and always have been. But even then, I mean, when no other state in the union would have even accepted some kind of these kind of above ground testing like this, except possibly New Mexico. It was, you know, rather than scaring people away, they decided to turn it into some, you know, great new show. And they would have parties on the rooftops of the casinos where you could see the bomb blast going off in the distance at Area 51 at Mercury, Yucca Flats. And they'd, you know, offer atomic cocktails, and they'd dress the showgirls up with atomic, you know, bathing suits that looked like a mushroom cloud, and or, you know, they'd be riding on rockets. And, I mean, they just turned it into a extravaganza. And shockingly, the people came to watch it.
Now, how has Las Vegas influenced not just local and state elections, but, as you've found, presidential races as well?
Well, there's so much money there. And, you know, as the situation currently with money and politics, national and local, that's just it's a fount of money that couldn't be ignored. And it traditionally, I mean, this goes way back. I mean, we really look at even the 1960 election, and the amounts of money spent then were so minuscule. But the relationships in Vegas became crucial in the 1960 election, the Nixon and Kennedy, and the organized crime ties really on both sides of both candidates. And who was influencing elections and what places, you know, all had kind of traced back to Las Vegas. Well, in this last presidential election, the amounts are staggering that went to both Democrat and Republican candidates on a national level.
We've been talking about the various forms of corruption and vice and such in Las Vegas, and government doesn't seem to have done all that much to stop it. Well, what about the FBI or the CIA?
Well, the CIA, you know, its mandate is not to get involved in domestic affairs, but the FBI has tried, and, I mean, there was a celebrated agent who was in Las Vegas in the 1970s and early 80s, and they almost ran him out on a railroad. Most of the FBI agents have taken, you know, they spend their time either, even the special agents in charge, the head of the office, spend their time there for 2 or 3 years working for the FBI, and then inevitably take some six-figure job with the casino industry. And the revolving door between law enforcement and corporate America is, pretty pervasive at this point, and Las Vegas is just a more stark example. It's a stark example of most things in America. But to leave, where the watchdogs go to work for the people they're supposed to be watching, then, it really compromises the integrity of any enforcement.
We only have a moment remaining, but what do you think of Las Vegas' latest effort to refashion itself? I mean, the family-friendly resorts seem to be going out, and we seem to be returning to the very adult playground.
Well, I think that, as you know, the thesis of the book, that Las Vegas really mirrors the rest of the country, and that it was, the pleasant yuppie days of the 80s and 90s are now kind of over, and the stark reality of the economy and everything else is, it's a tougher world right now, and Las Vegas will always be the first to reflect the new direction. And they'll always do whatever it takes to make money. And I think that the fun family thing was not turning out to be as profitable as they had hoped. And that really Americans are looking for a walk on the wild side.
Once again. and who would you say is your favorite Las Vegas character?
Oh, probably Hank Greenspun, who was the publisher of the newspaper there for many years. And he was just kind of a wild and woolly, larger-than-life figure who kind of walked on both sides.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Denton.
Thank you.
Okay, we have been talking with Sally Denton, co-author of the recent book, The Money and the Power, The Making of Las Vegas and Its Hold on America.
Woman, I can remember a woman. Warm were her kisses and tender was she, lying there in my arms. Why did you deceive me so? What devil inside made you go when I needed you most?